Okay, now I think you can hear me, right? I have to walk over and unmute the main Zoom connection in order to talk to you. We'll be getting these kinks worked out over the next few weeks. Well, welcome, everyone. I will reach you starting with Joan and Joseph. Pat? Tyler? Paul? Mark? Paulette? Bob K? Jim? Karen? Marv? Vin? Aaron? Welcome. Linda R? Phil? Kemyo? John? Betty? Etsudo? Shoketsu? Mick? Travis? Amelia? Abdullah? Cam? And Ruth Ann. What a nice big group. I like to think this is what happens in the fall, when we all turn inward. Let's see. In terms of announcements, I'm gonna toggle myself back to gallery view so I can see everybody. And okay, so in terms of announcements, our in-person meetings at the Zendo, limited in number and requiring proof of full vaccination and wearing masks throughout, is going to start Tuesday. And that means also next Sunday will be have an in-person option for those of you who are local. Please check the website for the requirements for that. We have 14 seats in here. So I don't think we're going to hit that number right away, but if we end up, there's more people than that want to participate, then we'll institute us some kind of sign up process or something. In terms of my, let's see, December, early December is a time of Rahatsu retreat for many Zen communities, most, if not all, Zen communities. We won't be having our own Rahatsu retreat, but I will be going actually in person to Great Baozen Monastery. So that's the first week in December. Online participation at that retreat is also possible, full-time or part-time. Dharma Rain also has a online retreat that you can participate in. I think they're in person, do some in-person stuff as well. So I encourage you to, you know, make retreat practice part of your practice. And I'll talk more about that at some point. Anything else I should be mentioning? I guess mentioning that we had a successful fundraiser, if you didn't already know. We raised $13,000, which is an awesome, awesome beginning for us in terms of this kind of annual fundraising campaign. Any other things I should announce or any questions about what is going on? Okey-dokey. Okay. So today's talk, I also did my weekly podcast episode on this, so hopefully there'll be some time to pause and discuss and ask questions and or even go into breakout groups and share ideas about how to enliven your Zazen. So, Just in case you're not familiar, just in case you're just joining us and you've done other kinds of meditation or you don't really know much about meditation, the main form of meditation in the Soto Zen school, so that is our lineage, so there's Buddhism, and then there's Zen Buddhism, and then there's Soto Zen Buddhism, so there's just as many kinds of Buddhism as there are Christianity, so keep that in mind. In Soto Zen, our main practice is Zazen, which means seated meditation. And in Soto in particular, we don't formally work with koans in our Zazen. We study koans, these teaching stories, Zen teaching stories. But mostly our meditation is what we call shikantaza or just sitting. Shikantaza means nothing but precisely sitting. So if you were to go to Japan, and which is where our lineage comes from, if you were to go to Japan and go to a monastery and they were to give you Zazen instruction, they would tell you how to sit. They would, give you a cushion, they would tell you how to cross your legs and how to, hold your back up nice and straight. And then they would say, just let go of thinking. I don't even know if they would tell you that much. And then that would be it. That, you just sit there. you got to keep in mind that in a way, that is the simplicity. That is truly how simple this practice is. At the same time, when you actually try to do it, you're like, well, what does it mean? What does it mean to just sit? When I just sit, my habit energy just carries me forward and I worry about stuff, or I plan stuff, or I fantasize about stuff, or my mind just wanders all over, or I fall asleep. So there's this big question for those of us who practice this kind of meditation. So are you supposed to do anything about that? You just sit and accept that and let that be. Whoa. Can you do anything about it? Because the irony is, even though we're aiming to just sit, and this is even by one of our Zen ancestors, Dogen, called this is not meditation practice, even though that's the case, we are. I mean, I hesitate to say we're looking for something, because as I'm going to explain, that sets up a dualistic thinking. If we're looking for a particular state or experience, way of being, then we'll think, oh, I don't have that right now. I need to get that. I need to sit here so I can get that. And it sets up all this dualistic thinking, which I'll get into more. But hopefully, we have all experienced to some degree or another, whether on the meditation cushion, maybe not, maybe at other times in your life, maybe when you are hiking or you are doing some task that helps you get in the zone or something. We are familiar with this way of being where we're not all caught up in our internal mental commentary. Where instead of being just the only thing that we can see is what I call our mental map of reality. We've named this, we've named that, we know where we are, we know how things are going to happen. And that's usually all we're actually paying attention to, not necessarily what's actually happening. So we all have this experience of, at least for moments, being able to break free of that endless mental chatter, have some spaciousness and stillness to really see and perceive what is going on, even if it's just the carpet in front of us and the traffic going by. There's something just wonderful and refreshing and grounding in that experience. So we are kind of, that is what just sitting really is. But as we say, Zazen is not meditation practice. Zazen is sitting still and trying to just be a human being. It's trying to just be. So we make kind of a special practice of doing that. We set everything aside and practice just being a human being because, frankly, that's hard. You wouldn't think it would be hard, but it's hard. So we try to just sit and be. But whatever challenges we face in Zazen, or I should say, however we sit is how we live. You know, however we sit Zazen is how we live each moment of our lives. So, you know, when I sit, there's a whole lot of thinking going on. There's planning and ideas and da-da-da-da. And that's kind of how I live, right? When I'm not on the cushion, I'm walking around and there's planning and there's thinking and there's stuff going on. So, you know, if Zazen is usually, not always, but the easiest place to try to practice this letting go of the mental map and just being. But because our practice is this, is about just being, and there's something whole about this. It's just being as we are, exactly where we are, exactly with things just as they are, without any agenda to change anything. That's not to say when we get up off the cushion, we don't take care of our lives and, you know, maybe aim to change things. But we want to be able to just be with what is. And it's because that it's this holistic, whole being attitude that we're trying to cultivate. What we try to do is avoid any kind of technique, if you will, that creates dualism and division. So there's nothing wrong with what I call directed effort meditation practices. Very beneficial. There's lots of beneficial things in the world, right? So that is fine. Directed effort meditation practices are like, there's many of them. You might concentrate on your breath, follow your breathing, count your breathing, let your whole awareness be filled with the breath. Or you might attend to sounds, or you might, in other forms of meditation and other traditions, you know, have a mantra, or you know, concentrate on a koan or a teaching or something. There's an object of meditation. So when your mind wanders, you bring it back to the object of meditation. It's not easy, but it's very straightforward. But in our just sitting. Again, you can go ahead and do that if you like it, if it makes you like to sit, if it helps you kind of break out for at least initially out of that that habit energy churn of thinking, you know, go for it. But we try to avoid using those techniques because those techniques set up dualism and frequently struggle. So as soon as we have an idea like, okay, we need want to be concentrating on this thing because then we're going to get this kind of outcome as we're sitting here. That's the kind of mental state that I want as opposed to this mental state. And now I know I'm doing it well or I'm not doing it well. And now I'm going to try to do it. A minute ago, I wasn't trying to do it. So now we've gotten all kinds of stuff involved. And even if you manage to concentrate, even if you manage to like, all right, I've, you know, held my mind on this meditative object and I've entered another mental and physical and emotional state. Now, some you, which I like to call the executive I, some I has achieved that. So even if you attain this kind of, you know, spaciousness or stillness that you want, I have achieved that. So there remains that extra I, and I have made an effort, and it depends on my effort. So try not to employ those kinds of approaches, which may make it sound like then we just have to surrender to habit energy, and there's nothing we can do to make our zazen. So I'm trying to avoid, you know, the terms like improve our zazen or make our zazen better, even though that may be the first place our minds go. So that's why I'm using the term, how can we enliven our zazen? How can we more often or for longer periods of time sit there, really surrender our mental map, really be alert and present just for what's going on. And this is a tricky thing, because our small self, which I mean like our habit energy, our desires, our conditioning, all of this, our small self has no interest in this activity. Zero. It's boring. It has nothing, you know, it's just, so if you do manage to convince the small self to put aside all of its usual activity, then it's like, well, there's nothing going on. I'm just going to check out and just, you know, then I'm just dull. I'm distracted. I'm asleep, whatever. So we kind of, as human beings, we tend to have these two modes, on or off. And I'm only on if something exciting or interesting or relevant is happening. If it's not happening, then we just check out. We don't pay attention. Just think about other stuff or whatever. So we're trying to do this unique thing in zazen, which is to let go of all of that activity, but still remain alert and attentive and appreciative and alive. So that it's like you're not missing a single moment. So I have some suggestions for ways to enliven your zazen without employing dualistic tools, without employing tools that will cause struggle. A lot of our Zen ancestors mentioned zazen is without struggle at all, which, you know, if you've tried to meditate at all, you're like, huh, what kind of meditation would that be? You know, like, would just be sitting there with your mind wander, or like, what would it be? So how do we enliven our zazen without struggle? And I guess I think of it as working on our attitude, our willingness. If this is a holistic practice, it's like, if you take an attitude toward your zazen that is open and appreciative and willing, your zazen will be enlivened. But in a way, that attitude is not different from zazen. Zazen, in a way, is not a result. Zazen is taking that attitude. So it's almost like, how do we take the attitude? And by attitude, I mean not just mental, but like kind of physical attitude and emotional attitude, mental attitude. So it's the position, the posture that we're taking with our whole being. We're learning how to take the posture of zazen. So I think of it as these are little ways, creative, gentle, compassionate ways to encourage yourself to sit zazen. Encourage yourself to be present for it, to be wholehearted in it. So I'm going to share some of these ways, and I was going to share a list of them, but I won't bother. But I do have a list of them available. And there's 14 of them. I mean, there could be infinitely more. And so in a way, I hope that I leave enough time that, you know, I can hear from you all, or we can go into breakout rooms and people can share different ways that you might have done this successfully in the past to help yourself open up to that feeling, that attitude of Zazen. And as I go through them, I mean, these are all just ones that my Zazen has needed a lot of enlivening. That's why I have 14 different ways, you know, at the snap of my fingers to share. And I have to still have to employ them all the time. And a lot of times I find that you need to mix them up a little bit. You know, one approach will work for a while, and then it won't work anymore. And but you know, and then we have to be careful with work, right? Because then we can easily take these approaches and then just apply them as corrections. So you know, we can be sitting there, and once again, we have an ego-based agenda of how we want our meditation to be, and we'll say, oh, I'll use one of those approaches Domio said. Okay, now I'm using that approach, and it isn't working. It isn't giving me the results that I want. So if we apply them in that corrective manner, they often won't result in enlivening our zazen. Maybe they will, but... So, yeah. I guess... Maybe before I get into, no, I'll share them, and then it might be more clear what I'm talking about, and then we'll open it up. So I decided to start with a few that were kind of based in the body, and then I'll go on to more imaginative ones. And it, you know, these are things that work for me. So, you know, you may have a completely different way into this matter. So number one is sit perfectly still. So when you take the meditation posture, whether you're sitting on a cushion or a bench or a chair, and you're, you know, you have a nice upright spine, like your spine is suspended from the ceiling on a string, and your vertebrae are just hanging down, and then you try to hold every muscle perfectly still. You know, make that is the effort. Obviously, you still blink, you still swallow, you still breathe. But those are automatic movements. So essentially, you're holding so still, you know, like there's a wild animal, you know, coming up to your zazen seat. You don't want to scare it away. And yeah, you have to breathe and blink and whatever, but you can absolutely minimize those movements. And sometimes this just, you know, body and mind are not separate. And this just can give you a little gateway into stillness and into this moment, which is very simple. And it's an effort you can make that kind of, it just doesn't go anywhere. It's not an effort that, like, I'll sit really still and then, like, what are you achieving by sitting really, by not doing anything? So I like to think of this as, like, you're kind of tricking the small self into participating in Zazen. Like, let's try to stay really still. Like you would, you know, have a kid, you know, get them to behave the way you want by, you know, making it into a game. Sit really still. So the second is be the body. So this is different than using physical sensations or a body scan or something as a way to settle the mind. And like I said, that is fine to use that kind of approach. This is, again, it's more of that integrated approach. There's not a mind focusing on the body. We are trying to just be the body and have a sense of it as a whole, not excluding anything, of course, a sensation and, you know, in your knee or something like that, but kind of the sense of the body as a whole, its position in space, Its sense of proprioception, which is like the parts of the body relative to each other, you know, the contact with the meditation seat. And you just, you know, cultivating the sense of just being a big lump of flesh sitting on your meditation seat. You are the body. And the body, you know, there's problems with over-identification with the body, but frankly, it's not nearly as bad as over-identification with the mind. At least the mind, at least the body is just, you know, right here. It's fairly simple, whereas the mind is, you know, past, future, possibilities, everything. So just being the body. And nothing, then nothing but the breath. So oftentimes people are taught, if you're just starting out in Soto Zen meditation, just starting out in Shikantaza, first you start by following the breath or counting the breath. And to my mind, that is using a directed effort practice to settle the mind so then you can do Zazen, which sets up this idea that you can't do Zazen until you do something willful to settle your mind first, which I do not believe to be true. But, you know, there's nothing, you know, like immoral or inherently wrong with that approach. So go ahead. But this approach of using the breath is a little different, where it is, again, a little bit more holistic. Not there is some kind of you in your head that's concentrating on your breath, but that you let go of everything, all concerns, and now you're just sitting here, and frankly, the pretty much the only thing that's happening is the breath. So it's like it's kind of like a letting go and a simplicity of this is, you know, right now this moment is just so still and there's nothing going on. All I notice is the breath. But the breath is always happening. So sometimes when we're letting go, the mind doesn't know what to do. Once we've, okay, fine, you know, I'll set aside planning my grocery list, but now what? Like the mind wants something. So if you're just like, well, look, the breath is still happening. The breath is always happening. So it's kind of this gentle way of just allowing the breath to, allowing our awareness to be filled with the breath, rather than resting on the breath as it, you know, as it can go, could go somewhere else, just like being filled with it. Let's see. I'm a little worried that there'll be so many of these that you'll forget to ask about someone that you're like, what? Wait, how does that work? So I don't know if you can jot notes or something. And maybe once I'm done here, I will pull up that list or share it in the chat so that if you want to pull it up, you can and see if anything arises. So the next one is see what happens. So, you know, say you're going to sit for 20 minutes and the small self figures, you know, we know what's going to happen this next 20 minutes. Nothing, you know, nothing particularly interesting is going to happen. I've sat Zazen lots of times before, you know, so we kind of write off those 20 minutes. We don't really need to pay much attention to those 20 minutes. But if you kind of think about, you know, your life is ticking away. Every moment is a moment you will not get back. And so if you turn toward that 20 minutes and you just, you want to be present for it. Yeah, you got a lot of other stuff to do later. But for at least this little 20 minutes of your day, you are going to simply see what happens. Be there for what happens, which there's always an infinite number of things happening. There's the breath. There's the bird singing outside the window. There's the traffic. There's the sensation of your body not feeling much pain, perhaps, if you're lucky at the moment. Just so you don't have to grasp at anything to pay attention to. It's just, it's just all happening. And you're very, you know, there's not much to it. You don't have to do any great effort in order to just be with that 20 minutes. But to see what happens, I like that phrase, that's something that you can just remind yourself of, see what happens, reminds you, you don't know what's going to happen. It's that sense of knowing that ends up, you know, alienating us from our experience. See what happens. You never know. And another way to kind of approach a similar attitude is what I call one day left to live. So you can perhaps inspire yourself to pay attention to that 20 minutes by imagining as vividly as you can that you know you have 24 hours or less to live. And this is not about, you know, imagining death or like what might lead to it or all the worries or fears. Kind of just you imagine that there's nothing you can do about it and that you're actually, you know, you have an acceptance of this fact. So there you are. And you just want to really appreciate your next 24 hours. So as you sit there, this might be the last time you ever sit zazen. You only have 24 hours. You probably want to, you know, spend some time with family or, you know, what other things you want to do. This might be the last time you ever sit. So if you can summon that sense of this might be the last time I ever do this, there might be more curiosity about what this experience might be, what zazen could be, what stillness could be, what letting go could be. Another one is take a complete break. So this is, I say, there's a lot of stuff we're thinking about on the meditation cushion. And we don't have to be thinking about any of it. None of it. I don't care if you're dying or somebody you know is, or like, because if there's something you need to be taking care of in this next half an hour or whatever, then go take care of it. You shouldn't be sitting, you know, if there's really something you need to take care of in the next 30 minutes, then you should be taking care of it. So if you've chosen to sit for 30 minutes, like you've already acknowledged that, you know, for 30 minutes, you do not need to be doing anything. So this is about seeing if you can tap into that, identify that part of the small self that is feels compelled to keep on working on stuff all the time. And to invite yourself to, you know, we'll take care of that. You can take care of that later. I mean, I don't highly suggest this, but if you really need to, you might have a pad of paper next to you and you can write down that thing that the small self says we absolutely cannot forget. Okay, write it down and then you really don't have to think about it for the remainder of the zazen period. And of course you will. I mean, habit energy will bring us back there. But this is a way to invite ourselves to let go in a positive way. So it's not a, you know, stop thinking. Thinking is bad. Thinking isn't what we're supposed to be doing in zazen. It's instead, it's like reminding ourselves, you don't have to do, you know, take a break. If somebody told you in a different setting, right? Take a load off. It's Friday. You know, just chill. And, you know, these other settings where we might think about now we can let go and relax. Think about doing that in zazen, but even at a deeper level, that we don't even have to be, you know, engaging people in social, you know, conversation. We don't even have to be enjoying ourselves. Just don't have to try to figure anything out, do anything, plan anything, whatever. It's a total break. And then the next one, if you still have trouble doing that and your small self is very, very concerned, you might try visualizing taking whatever that concern is and putting it on your altar. If you have one, you know, so it's like, it's this gentle acknowledgement that yes, that's important. You know, thank you, small self, for worrying about that. Let's put that up here for now, and then we'll think about it later. So it's kind of a gentle invitation to, you know, let go of something for now. Or if you don't have an altar, you know, up on a shelf or some place where you're going to notice it later. Another variation on this theme, recently I imagined my small self as being a beaver, a busy beaver who's running around, doing stuff, working hard, and I just, you know, invite the beaver to take a short nap. And I just, you know, kind of imagine it over in the corner, just, you know, just taking a short, it's, you know, it's gonna, as soon as it's done with its nap, it's gonna jump up and run around and do stuff. But just take a short nap. Okay, so then this is number 8. No control over the mind. Just sit as if there is absolutely nothing you can do about what happens in your mind during zazen. And honestly, I think this is closer to the truth than the idea that we have an executive eye who in theory should be able to control our thinking and our behavior. If only we could summon enough willpower, that executive eye could make things happen the way that we want them to happen. If that's on one end of the spectrum, and this no control over the mind is, I mean, we're way over here toward the no control end of the spectrum. What we have more is indirect influence. By sitting in zazen, by doing the habits that we do, we create different conditions for our lives. But that direct control over the mind is an illusion. So anyway, you're sitting there and you just try to really convince yourself of that, really kind of let that be. So you're just sitting there and, you know, then it's like when you notice that you've been caught up in thoughts, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. Just like if you were watching somebody else's mind, you were just watching the clouds float by. Now you're not caught up in thoughts. Huh, I didn't do that. And sometimes this just kind of, you end up stepping back from the whole drama. Instead of engaging with the drama, you're just being with what is. And a lot of times, or I don't know about a lot, but sometimes what happens is all of that habitual energy thinking loses some energy. It loses some of its compulsion. And even sometimes I have said to, like, and this sounds a little bit like dividing yourself, but, you know, if you think of all these different parts of ourselves, they're parts and we want all those parts to be friends. You know, I might look at the busy mind and say, okay, you wanna think about what kind of shelving to buy? Okay, go ahead. And oftentimes the mind will just be like, well, I guess I don't have to think about that right now. I mean, if you just don't resist it and you're just with it, it just can go away. A lot of times those thoughts, you just give your mind permission to do it and suddenly the small self has no interest in pursuing that line anymore. So number 9, what remains? So this is getting a little more subtle. We often hear people speak like this. I speak like this. You might say, okay, I'm sitting here and I'm aware of the present moment. And then, you know, sometimes my mind wanders and I am not there. And then I come back to the present moment. So there's a sense of self or presence when in a certain state, and then when the mind is wandering, we don't have that state, and that's not, we don't identify with that, so that's not I. And what this actually is identification with the skanda of consciousness. So the Buddha said there are five components to a human being: our bodies, our form, our sensations, our feelings of like, dislike, and indifference, our mental formations, our thoughts, and our consciousness. So, and he says, we do not reside in any of them. None of them are the self. None of them are graspable. None of them are enduring or inherently like real in the sense of like being independently inherently real. They're real in a sense, but in flux. So we are not our consciousness. So when we say, I am not there, when my mind is wandering, what we're saying is, when I have a sense of consciousness, that's me. And when I don't have that, that's not me, which is causes struggle and causes suffering, causes a sense that like we're missing our lives. Whenever our minds are wandering, we're wasting our lives. We're not even there. At the same time, of course, we do like being aware. Like I said at the beginning, we like some freedom from that endless mental commentary. So that is, we're certainly, you know, trying to cultivate that on the cushion. But this sense of, just to question this whole sense of self. When your mind is wandering, your body is still sitting there on the cushion. You're still fulfilling your intention of sitting, at least in a physical way. What is not there? Is the self over in the wandering mind? Or does the self disappear when the mind wanders and then reappear when the mind comes back to the present? And you just begin to realize, wait a second, if you try to grasp this, you can't. But a positive way of exploring this is what remains. What is true when you're sitting and you're, you know, aware of the present and enlivened, and then your mind wanders and then your mind comes back? What remains true? So hopefully that will inspire. A somewhat simpler one is number 10, stop meditating. You're sitting there inevitably, even no matter what instructions you've been given, now you're sitting zazen. And now you have some idea about what you're supposed to be doing. It's different than what you're supposed to be doing the rest of the time. It's different than when you're doing when you sit and have a cup of tea. Now you're sitting zazen. And if it, you know, nonetheless, you, despite that intention and effort, you're caught up in habit energy, you're falling asleep. It sometimes helps to just go, I'm not going to meditate anymore. I mean, I'm still going to sit here. I'm still going to just sit here still. But I'm not going to bother to meditate. And sometimes that will just like give you access to much more sense of, well, oh, right. This meditation is supposed to be about just sitting. Oh, yeah, that's pretty simple. It just suddenly makes things simple and can open up a little bit. Number 11 is who cares? When you notice your meditation isn't the way you would like it to be, you can say, who cares? And naturally, it's a little part of you that's like, but I want to be able to meditate. I want to be able to, you know, relieve my stress. I want to be able to have insight, whatever it is, whatever reasons bring you to the meditation cushion. But when you say, some part of you says, who cares? That just kind of calls all of that into question, like that grasping, trying to make something happen. And there can be a sense of lightness and like that this is kind of a optional thing. Let's see, I'm going on and on here, but I have three more. Number 12 is invite all of yourselves to the meditation seat. So whenever there is recognizing there are different parts of you, different desires, different competing concerns, and all of them need to participate fully in order for Zazen to be really wholehearted and enlivened. So, you know, this feels like a skillful thing, right? Like you're just like the facilitator. And there's part of you that's, you know, maybe there's a part of me that's like worried about the climate crisis and I'm thinking about how I'm going to, you know, what kind of activist thing I'm going to do, what kind of project I'm going to do. And I can say, ah, oh, you know, that is a really important thing. And you know, you're going to be even better able to address that if you take a little time, let it go for now, and sit here. So whatever part of you is concerned about family, concerned about health, whatever, to just, you know, embrace that and invite them to come to the meditation seat. Let's see. 13 is allow yourself to be supported. Won't have much time to go into this, but like when we are able to take this attitude of Zazen, when we're able to let go, usually what happens is we notice so much more. We just notice, ah, wow, we have a zendo here where we can meet. Wow, it's like it's raining. There's beautiful, there's water coming to nature the way it's needed. Ah, it like gratitude starts to arise as we open up and realize all the ways that we are being supported on every side. Air to breathe. We don't have gnawing hunger in our stomach. For today, we are alive and healthy. Well, it just, and so that kind of, it's almost like I get sometimes a sense that my small self is trying to hold it all together. You know, and it all depends on my small self keeping her act together or everything will fall apart. And this inviting that small self to realize, okay, you're not doing this by yourself. All of this is around you. So like allowing yourself for a time being to appreciate that support. And then finally, what do I not yet see? So I'm not sure what kind of things awaken your imagination and your inspiration, whether it's Zen teachings or poetry or something, but hopefully we all have an intuition that there is so much more possible as a human being, so much more to see and, you know, to be able to be so much freer and more compassionate, less attached to self, whatever, that it's really like I've used the analogy before, we're all in a play. And the insight that we're capable of is like noticing there's a door to the theater and walking out into the sunshine. Like, really? And that's how differently we can perceive and be. So sometimes that, you know, Zazen can be enlivened just by reminding ourselves, like, we don't know. And not only do we not know, like, we have no idea. So you've got to turn yourself to what do I not yet see? All right, so at least we have 10 minutes. I'll open it up there. Should I share that list so that you can let me see, I gotta pull up my Google Drive share that document. I'll just put the link in the chat. Let's see. I think this will work. I think if you follow that link, and somebody could give me a thumbs up if you do it, that you'll get to the list of ways. And I suppose I could paste them in the chat too, if that helps. There you go. All right. So any questions or comments or other ways that you have enlivened your zazen? Marv, is that supposed to be a hand raised as opposed to a thumb? Okay. And go ahead and you can raise your hand using the reactions button on the bottom, or just do it the old-fashioned way, or just unmute yourself.
Now that I'm unmuted, can I start?
Go ahead, yes.
When you were talking about this could be your last chance to do Zazen, what occurred to me is beginner's mind, it might be worth also thinking, this is the first time I ever do it, so I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I like that. Thinking of instituting a practice of rather than leaving okay like comments or questions and then the silence feels awkward. I was thinking of instituting like all right, so we're just going to take a minute of silence, but if you have a question, you are welcome to chime in. So then we just like we're all Zen people, we can handle that, right? But you can chime in or comment before the minute is over. Oh.
Romeo, could you return to number 9? Because my notes are just incomplete on that one. I couldn't summarize it in notes.
The good news is that I will be doing like the next podcast, I'll be finishing up these. So this week's podcast was 1 through 5, and next week's will be the rest. So you can always refer to that. But yeah, what remains? So that's the one about this questioning that sense that, of identification with our consciousness, and that when our mind wanders, we aren't present somehow. There's an I that's not present. Saying, well, where was the I? What remains true? So the consciousness comes and goes. We're looking for something. Our true self is something deeper. Karen, you had your hand up.
Oh, I was just going to say thank you for going over this, because I feel like you've let me off the hook anyway, that no matter what happens, you know, it's okay. I personally just try to keep myself, I mean, when my mind wanders, you know, constantly, I tell myself just this, like try to just come back to this. And that works for, you know, a couple seconds and then I'm off again. But anyway, it just sounds like there's nothing you can really do wrong.
Yeah, it's a willingness, and it's very easy to make Zazen into a, you know, something you should do, or other people have an idea of how it should be, what it should be like, or comparing it to other people's experience of Zazen or whatever, and then it becomes this chore kind of, and we're divided as we sit there. Some parts of us don't really want to do it, and or, you know, our small self is like, eh. So this sense that, like, this is a choice. Nobody's making us do this. We are choosing this. So trying to choose it as wholeheartedly as we can, as opposed to struggling. And I don't know about you, but I don't like anyone telling me what to do. Apparently not even myself. So, well, here we are at 12:14. That's probably enough. I will close with our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Donya.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Hey, Bob, is that a snowflake hanging from your Enso?
Yes, it is.